At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Good evening. Welcome to the Evangelical Dark Web. Tonight, we're going to be discussing Anons and Brother Wars, which is a topic that's been raging on all sorts of different fronts. It seems to be like the latest major battle, I guess, in what I've called Woke Wars 2, but you know, a lot of stuff going on. And this is something that's kind of been what Big Eva has been going after people and their critics for in the past. Like, you know, how to engage on social media. There's been a lot of Gospel Coalition articles about this that I thought we were all unified in, you know, ragging on and dragging the Gospel Coalition for their bad takes on social media discourse and stuff like that. But apparently, some smaller figures want to weigh in and give the same take as the Big Eva figures of a few years ago. So it's interesting. As A.D. Robles likes to say, you know, Woke Wars 1 and Woke Wars 2 are the same war. And I like the term Woke Wars 2 because it does kind of describe a lot of what's going on, because, you know, you just replace black with Jew and we kind of have the same issues that we kind of had before. Except this, there's a lot of money to be, there's more of a financial incentive for Woke Wars 2 than I think Woke Wars 1. I honestly don't see how, you know, go woke, go broke was a real thing. And it was a real thing for people like Beth Moore. And a lot of seminaries and Bible colleges are probably hurting from having gone woke, because and the fact that college is probably going to go out of style in a few years, I think, because the job market doesn't justify it. But those are just some of my opening thoughts. We have a lot of little topics that we're going to, that kind of have the same theme of Anons and Brother Wars. So we're going to address all sorts of different questions tonight. And I brought on a special guest, Jeff Wright, who's been on the live stream before, and we're welcoming him back. And, you know, he's a pastor in Tennessee or Kentucky or something.
Tennessee? Yeah, Middle Tennessee. Yep.
Awesome. Middle Tennessee. So he rejoins us. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back on. I enjoyed it last time. Appreciate what y'all do. And so glad to be back.
Yeah. And you had a pretty good stream, thread, not stream. That was a good peacemaking stream. I keep saying stream. It was a good peacemaking olive branch, so to speak. You know, and I struggle with this and trying not to burn as many bridges as possible, because I'm in a little more of a precarious situation doing like discernment ministry and stuff like that. So you're going to make a lot of enemies just reporting on news stories and stuff like that. So, or you're going to have people try to use you. These are some things that J.D. Hall wrote about in his Substack, which is actually really good. I recommend that. So there's a lot, you know, a lot of enemies that I could make, and I need to try to not make as many enemies as possible. Yeah. Like, can I slow it down? Like, I think certain bridges are burned. You know, the Apologia, maybe not Apologia, but definitely Alpha and Omega Ministries. I feel like that one has kind of been torched. There's a few blocks on the Twitter sphere and stuff like that. But who knows? Who knows? Owen Strand did unblock me just to struggle session me about what I said about Samuel Say being a token and how that was vile. So
Owen, you know,
so Owen's people can unblock me.
To have blocked. Yeah, you want him to have you blocked. That's the best thing.
And thank you, Acts of Boniface, for the super chat. Thankful for your brother to stand firm in the midst of the battle. And maybe we'll have a meme review that's all sorts of trouble, because there's been a lot of controversial memes lately, which do relate to what we are going to discuss tonight. So,
well, and apparently they're a test of fellowship at this point, which is wild. but apparently certain memes are a test of fellowship.
Yeah, it really shouldn't be that way. So I'm kind of going to pull up your stream. Anthony, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, is well.
I keep saying stream. So anyway, you said, been thinking about Brothers Wars and have figured something out. Hear me out. The root. And you talk about how all these different ministries have different roles. It's almost like what Paul said about different parts of the body having different functions and all work together. So you're saying that Moscow's primary vision is building structure and institutions that reach into the future. The picture would be a wise architect general directing a corp, the corps of engineers. Christian nationalism's primary vision is doing battle with the enemy at the gate or on the march heading our way. The picture would be the Cid mounted on horseback and swinging a sword with arrows sticking out of his back. Or Vlad, very possibly Vlad. Is that Vlad the Impaler?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just, you know, he was pretty very much into vertical impalement, which was pretty cool. And then he said, Apologia's primary vision is directed at engagement with the ideas and affections of a lost world. Picture the street evangelist preaching and debating all comers. G3's primary vision is a doctrinaire precision. The picture is basically Calvin in his study in Geneva, revising and expanding the Institute. So basically, they're the bookworms, is what you're saying.
I should be clear that I try to make these things like the kind of thing that the people would receive as a compliment. You know,
right. Yeah, that's certainly what I've seen. Like Apologia, they're very known for their street side ministry, the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Mormons, even abortion on that issue. So, yeah,
things I'm thankful for. Yeah.
I mean, and Moscow does a lot of, from a, like an institutional standpoint, of building up like a publishing wing that has some legitimacy.
Obviously, yeah, I mean, Canon Press is pretty big for a Christian publishing company. I mean, they're not as big as Harper's Collins, for instance, or even Salem, but, you know, they're larger than pretty much most. They're probably the largest people offering, say, Stephen Wolfe, an advance or anything like that.
Right.
Let's see. Ogden is a bit newer to me, so I'm a little more hesitant here, but I generally think of them as like the CN camp, albeit a more of a bard component or a troop signaling bulger.
I meant that to be bugler. Yeah.
Bugler. Yeah. I've never seen that word written.
That may not be how it's supposed to be written.
Daily Bugler. Isn't that, you know, Spider-Man?
It's Daily Bugle.
Bugle. Well, same spelling. Well,
American Reformer is its own thing too. Definitely doing architect thing broadly, but with some strong battle readiness.
Hey, it is the leading Christian
official
Christian national, which I mean, it is kind of like the National Review of Christendom. And
except, yeah, because
I mean that in a complimentary way.
Sure,
not in a CIA subversion way.
Yeah,
because that's kind of who. William F. Buckley is, yes, a lot of bad heroes of the 20th century that we've tackled recently. He would be one of them. Maybe we'll do a discernment thing on him. Last month was Bonhoeffer. Next month is going to be MLK. I guess this month I'm still going after Bonhoeffer because the movie tanked. Let's see. Wolf is his own thing too. Scholarly, this is Stephen Wolf.
Yeah.
Scholarly is all get out, but also willing to scrap and playing the jokester in a bard fashion. Isker and Engel are distinct as well. Isker cuts down the idol tree. Engel turns it into lumber as he builds a church village with it.
Yeah, I mean,
is he building Wolf, a village?
And Wolf did a great video this past week on Thomism where, you know, he was very concerned. And he basically was going through all the, the reformers and then coming to the conclusion that they're all Thomism. And, you know, he's very distraught about that. And meanwhile, like, you know, Isker and Engel are just like a perfect combination of like the more bookwormish Engel paired with the more, you know, jovial and like brawler-esque Isker. So it's a very good combination they have.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes me think of where I see, I should actually have us on the screen. I don't know why I didn't. Because it just defaulted. So I should it kind of makes me think of where Evangelical Dark Web fits into this. I like to think of ourselves as recon. You know, we're doing reconnaissance or intelligence work in this space. At least that's what I want us to be. That's what news gathering should be, is providing intel to the troops so that they can use in battle. I don't expect us to be the one scalping the most people or, you know, the hero knight or anything like that. But, you know, there is a place for intelligence. And yeah, I mean,
you need people to have like the, you know, the back catalog of all these people and just be like, yeah, this was the person that did X in 2018, because, you know, people have a short memory. So you need people that have those archives. And
I mean, the short memory is very much coming up with people like Neil Shenvey, who was a total liberal, who supported the wokeness infiltration of the Southern Baptist Convention until it was inconvenient to. So people have such a short memory on that. People actually think he was against wokeness from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I met him. I lost my first Twitter account, and so a lot of this is gone, but you can find his replies to it. But I met him online in Birmingham as he was arguing on Twitter for Resolution 9. And I was telling him, this is crazy. And, you know, I initially thought he had come to a better place. I did an interview with him on the SBC Underground podcast back in the day. So I'm not above being duped myself, but if you haven't updated your understanding of Shenvey from like 2019, it's high time to do so.
Yeah. So anyway, a lot of research that I like to do, and, you know, news gathering and stuff like that. I mean, this isn't the best outlet for think pieces. Not that there's no think pieces, but, you know, mostly we're just trying to do quick news and stuff like that. And I eventually want to expand and help more, you know, democratize the process and bring more people into the fold is going to be one of the goals for 2025. So you say it comes out in the way each group argues with the others. Moscow talks about and acts to both build and, as the latest No Quarter November video indicates, burn bridges as needed for the overall success of the long-term project. None of the description is an insult. Durbin,
so is that basically saying that Moscow feels the need that they need to burn the bridges, like call the herd, kind of? Is that what we're?
Well, that was my understanding from the No Quarter November video. When he set fire to those bridges, in a couple of different group chats, I wasn't the only one, but people were like, oh, he's going to start punching rightward. And that's what it appears. I mean, it looks like that's what he was doing.
So this is where the thread starts to shift into the conflict, right?
Yeah, it almost sounds like you view them, and maybe you're not wrong, that you view Moscow as someone who thinks that they're trying to safeguard the overall health, that this is like the holy fire or whatever that must keep burning. So they are trying to tend to the fire, not let it get out of control, but never letting it die out, not letting anything catch fire, or maybe more like a vine that you're trying to grow a giant pumpkin, and which is a very, very much a hobby for people. They buy these, you know, $200 pumpkin seeds to grow a giant pumpkin, and they're making sure they're taking care of their pumpkin every single day to make sure no weeds infiltrate, that this pumpkin gets pruned, so it's only devoting everything to the size that matters. Mm-hmm. And that's the Moscow mood, or that's kind of what you're describing Moscow as the people growing the giant pumpkin.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if they're watching, they may not appreciate that description because it makes it sound like their project is kind of silly. I don't see their project as silly, but I do see them as they're no longer trying to be the rising tide that lifts all ships. They're thinking what we're doing is the most important thing, and anything that's a threat to that now has to be called out. And so, like, you know, they've got New St. Andrews. That does matter. That is important. You just said can't impress. I kind of get, like, they've attained some stuff. And as they've obtained some things, I think they've now shifted into, it's not quite preservation, but it's definitely a cutting off anything that might represent some kind of threat to them.
I mean, I know J.D. Hall's kind of been a little bit more cynical in his takes, where he might attribute this as like a market share turf war. Yeah. The rise of another camp is a threat to their bottom line. So it is more, it's a financial market share in terms of economics.
Right. And I think that's a credible read. It's not the one that I take. I'm not quite so cynical, or at least I don't want to be quite so cynical yet. No, you know, JD is often right. And I'm just trying to like believe the best as long as I possibly can. And a turf war framing is just petty. And I've not known them to be petty. I'm hoping they've not shifted into pettiness. So I'm trying to see them as like, we've gained some ground. We need to make sure nothing erodes it out from under us.
Right. And keep in mind, I'm not using the pumpkin analogy to be disparaging. It's just, sure, it comes to my mind because, sure, you know, I read a book that informed me too much about growing giant pumpkins. So it's fresh on my mind. And that being said, I'm also a pumpkin spice aficionado. So Ben Dover says, my eyes, only masochists don't use dark mode. I use dark mode on my phone, but on my computer, I have like, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, the night light's going to go on anyway. So it's going to be super red anyway, eventually. But I don't mind light mode. I just don't. A lot of things look better. But anyway, so that's kind of,
he's insulting your Twitter game, just so you know.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Durbin joined Twitter and immediately sounded like Doc regarding how evangelicalism in the debate is the primary metric of evaluating faithfulness. That description isn't an insult either. Can you kind of explain that one? Jeff Durbin's, I guess, how his discourse is kind of relevant to his contribution to the overall movement. I'm trying to understand that point.
Yeah, so I'm trying to tread as fraternally as I can here. I did not think Durbin's entrance into X went well.
It's an understatement.
But the thing that I saw that I recognized is, you know, James is quick to be like, but you know, you've never debated blah, 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 or whatever. And Durbin's was sort of like, yeah, but these guys aren't actually out doing street evangelism or preaching at abortion clinics. And so like the common thread there with them both being at Apologia, and again, men that I respect, have been thankful for, have learned from, is that for them, like the test of Christian faithfulness is if you're on the street doing street level, you know, confrontational, although that's not all you're doing, but confrontational street level evangelism and debates, or if not street level debates, then academic debates. Like you got to be fighting the ideas face to face for it to be valid. And I appreciate that aspect of their ministry. I just don't think it works as a universalizing principle or a metric to evaluate who may or may not be being faithful in their Christian life.
Yeah, I mean, it is a works-based, you know, bragging, so to speak. You know, look at, I'm the one that's doing all these works. And there's no way for it not to come off that way when you're impugning other people that, you know. But, I mean, again, as far as the debate thing, I think debate me bro culture is dead, and it's a dinosaur that's past its extinction date. And it's been dead since 2020, proved that, you know, evidence doesn't matter. It only, like, policy and, you know, scoreboard matters. And, you know, we can debate all the science all you want, but at the end of the day, the debates didn't matter.
Yeah. So. See, I'm very friendly to that perspective too. Calvin in the Institute said what he calls proofs. He basically says you can't actually win a convert with proofs, but there are some usefulnesses to it. You can encourage the faith of a weaker believer. You can shut the mouth of a fool, and the, you know, maybe I can't remember the third one. Maybe it's like win the third party who's watching the debate take place.
Yeah, sounds like book one, right?
Yeah, I want to be charitable in that way. Like, I don't think James Watt's ministry's worthless or whatever, but I also don't think it can become an absolutizing principle.
I mean, I'm just more pointing to the whole. There is a demonstrable cultural shift in terms of the effectiveness of debate.
Right. And the death of the new atheist is also part of that, right? You know,
because yeah, it used to be all the atheist, new atheist debates. So, and I know like what Sam Harris, I mean, to some extent, James Lindsay was part of that.
You know, like Bart Ehrman, right? Yeah, you know, Bart Ehrman. Out a new book every Christian religious holiday attacking the faith. So I get where they're coming from.
Yeah, there was a time where that was a prime, you know, yeah. Like there was a prime time for that type of discussion. But now I think we're in more will to power, if that makes sense. Like this sure. is more about, you know, lawfare is being used against us. It's time to kind of turn the tables on the enemy here. So that's kind of more my read, you know, broader culture. I think most people are going to be conformists and go along with the winning side. So,
and you know, if somebody put a gun to my head, I don't want to rope people in and speak on their behalf. But if somebody said EDW, what you just articulated is kind of what I'm talking about with Christian nationalists, that even if you don't like the term Christian nationalist, kind of your sense of the world is there's enemies at the gates. And also there's real opportunities. Like with a new administration, we have some opportunity to make up some good ground that might forestall the next wave of enemies.
Well, I mean, part of the ground that they, especially Moscow, was burning was the ground of like those young men. And I'm not necessarily talking about like the Stone Choir young men, but just like the white boy summer young men, because yes. You might have a lot of people that don't go to church, but they like, you know, white boy summer because it's like solidarity with their boys. And the Moscow mood out of their own, you know, pride really was calling that gay, even though, you know, those people were the ones that pretty much helped Trump win an election. If you get down to the meme warfare on the internet, the fact that the Anons that they bashed were the ones that brought the Haitian story to life and made that a thing. Like right. That was all the Anons. That was all white boy summer.
And it was my white boy summer friends who I first kind of picked up on this dynamic from. My view of that is white boy summer is basically Doug Wilson's ideological grandchildren. But instead of bringing them into the fold and like shaping them, he called them gay and, you know, basically told them they were
valueless.
Yeah. And I just thought you were the first guy I heard talking about like edgy young men are a resource, not a threat. What are you doing, man? And again, I think the world of Doug, I've learned a ton from him, but I thought that was the first misstep that made me go, oh man, something weird. There's been a shift.
Like, yeah, you're chastising your most fertile ground, which is young men.
Yeah. And again, your offspring in a real sense.
So I have a quick take on this. I think there is a revival happening in the United States. I think we're in the middle of a revival, but some people don't like the fact that it's young, predominantly white, just because that's majority, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's the majority. So it's predominantly young white men
right.
that are turning to Christ, and people in Big Eva and apparently even people in Mid Eva can't stand that.
Yeah, it's which not is the right really surprising. Converting.
Well, let's yeah. But if we're going to be honest, there's no revival in America unless that is what it looks like, because otherwise I would say it's no longer America. If it's like, oh, we imported all the Christians and then they turned America, they wouldn't actually be reviving America because they're not necessarily from America. I mean, same thing with the British. I mean, you know, a revival in England would have to be the actual English, not they imported a bunch of third worlders and they just so happened to have been Christian.
Yeah. Or there's, you know, we would all be thankful for a great revival among ethnic Muslim, right? Like Middle Easterners.
Right.
But it wouldn't represent authentic historic British culture. Yeah. It would be.
It wouldn't save that country.
Look, I wouldn't say like if a bunch of like Christian missionaries go to Uganda and like, you know, 100 years from now, it's just the missionary couple and like their great grandchildren, and they repopulated like a tenth of the population of Uganda and call that a revival, just because they're all Christian. That's not a revival. That's just a takeover.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's a cultural displacement that also may have carried with it like Christian renewal with a new culture. Yeah.
Yeah. So that might be a tangent for another day, because I've definitely seen people debate on the internet the merits of sending missionaries to countries that are predominantly Christian in Africa, for instance, when, you know, the European backyard needs it. I mean, it's British debate,
sure.
to be clear. So moving on back to the thread, you talk about the CNN guys are constantly getting, so the Christian nationalists are constantly trying to get a direct fight, be forthright, i.e. don't be effeminate by fighting indirectly. G3 guys issue important statements with specific fonts, then head back into the study, still not insulting, although offering a fraternal laugh. I think that's there's definitely some truth to that.
Trying to although keep it lighthearted.
That only Scott Annual joined in on the Antioch Declaration, I believe, from but he was not an initial signer.
Yeah.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Or he wasn't one of the collaborators, I should say. I think he was an initial signer. I could be wrong about that part, but he was signed. And here's the thing. All of those are good and good, important, and right. Also, as far as I know, none of those groups don't do what the others are doing as far as the primary vision, although each group is pretty sure the other isn't doing it enough. So you're basically saying, you know, we're not all doing the same thing, but we don't think we're all doing this. What we should be doing enough. That didn't really make as much sense as I'd like it to, but you know, the Christian nationalists,
it sounds like you're saying
people are being Christian nationalists enough, and the G3 people don't think the Christian nationalists are being studious enough.
Oh, I
right. Although, like the Christian nationalists that I know are very studious, right? And a lot of them do street evangelism, and
they did the reading.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
and I'm sure Moscow is doing that. I know Ogden does street level evangelism with Mormons. I mean, we're all doing those things. We're just not doing it to the other group's satisfaction.
Yeah. And a lot of it's because we don't talk about it. You know, I don't need to talk about like my level of involvement in the local church. It's
sure.
Because, you know, this is what it is. And I'm not trying to like brag on myself or anything like that. I am an involved member of a local church, and I do more in the local church and just attend the regular Sunday service, just to be clear. But you don't need me. I don't need to brag on myself to tell the world what I do. I'm very comfortable with that. I think a lot of people may feel the same way. There are some people though, detractors of say Christian nationalism, that do feel the need to let the world know what they do. And that has definitely come out with Jeff Durbin and James White. They definitely have felt the need to let people know what they do.
Well, I mean, sure. And now the tagline right now, the talking point, you know, I don't know if whether it's coordinated or just, you know, organic, is you don't go to church, you know, kind of like, you know, they're basically, it's essentially a griper tactic of, you know, the counter to like a Nick Fuentes who claims Catholicism, but, you know, I don't even know if he goes to church or doesn't go to church.
Well, I do have a set of polls that we're going to look at that describe the Anons, so we can get into that subject soon. I haven't seen the results yet, or all of the results. Certainly no memory of the results.
Yeah. I had tweeted last night thinking about the Anons that I know their real world identities. And there's this move to treat the Anons on X like they're evangelical incels. You know, they're just losers in their mom's basement. And that's not, I mean, again, it's anecdotal. It's not comprehensive. But all
I mean, it is true. It is true. That is how they're doing it.
Yeah. But everyone, and I know more than a few real identities of guys who are on Twitter anonymously. They have huge families. They own businesses or in like high level in the companies they work in. They, you know, are dedicated churchmen. They're some of the best people that I know. And I think this idea that you can just shame them by acting like they're something they're not is not going to work. What's going to do is erode your credibility because they know they don't fit that description. And so all that does is make them look at you and kind of have a laugh and keep going about doing all the great things they've given themselves to.
Some people just love good screen names.
I mean, for starters, like point number one, you know, calling your detractors incels did not work for Kamala Harris. Yep. So if the fact that these Mideva types that bashing on, and again, it goes beyond that because, you know, Jordan Peterson did it, you know, like, you know, Steve Dace and his crew do it. So all these people that bashing on, it's like, it didn't work for Kamala Harris. So don't think that you can just employ her strategy and that'll work for you. It won't. The second point is, yeah, you got to actually like touch grass and like go into a room. And like, if you actually talk to people, you realize, oh, this guy's an Anon, that guy's an Anon. Like, especially if you're doing all these conference circuits, I'm sure like, you know, I was in a conference in Tennessee and guess what? Whole room full of Anons, brilliant guys. Like, you know, you meet them, you talk to them, have intelligent conversation with them. And yeah, they're not, a lot of them are Anons. And as you kind of described, you know, they have families, they have children, they're well-paying jobs, but yeah, they're just normal guys. Yeah.
Right. And they've got stuff to lose if the mob turns on them. So they've strategically chosen. Something I'd put in that tweet, not to make everything about my Twitter account, but these guys know why they chose anonymous forward-facing profiles. And having your face on things carries its own temptations, right? A lot of guys don't want the blowback that'll come if they say something that's too far outside of the acceptable Overton window. So like having a face account can tempt you to be a squish. Anons, it sure, it can tempt you to being unhinged. But neither one of those is free from temptations towards error.
I mean, I know I pointed out this week, it's just like the fact that all these pastors are like, not they're, you know, they don't have anything to lose as far as like, you know, they can't get fired from corporate America, yet they won't actually.
They can't get longhoused out of their churches, though.
That is possible and does happen.
And I know of a pastor or two that is.
I mean, you interviewed the Dominion dating guy.
Well, and that's the temptation that having your face on things brings, that you can't actually say what you think because it might cost you in your real world circumstances. That's a real temptation for having a face account. It's better to just own what the temptations and advantages are and give the benefit of the doubt to people who chose a particular strategy.
Yeah. And we'll talk more about Anons after we're finished the Brothers War thing, because there's a lot of things to debunk about the myths that are being said about Anons or Anons. I don't know which one you prefer, because apparently it's a debate.
Yeah, I guess I'm an Anon.
Soft A. Got it. So, you know, and then you say pretty much that you're long-term optimistic on the end of the Brother War. So you think this is going to end soon, I guess, hopefully. It's also why I think real engagements face-to-face is an important step to get to. And yeah, hey, everyone should just come to that conference at Right Response next year.
Yeah, there you go.
I got my tickets. So I'm going.
I told Joel when Jeff Durbin dropped out, I was like, you could bring on the true and greater Jeff, but you know, he had better options.
I think he's going to get some, I think he, I don't know if he's announced who's replaced him or I just know who's replaced him. I know he's going pretty offensive with the replacement. So anyway, still, I think this is the core issue, the aesthetic version of what good men, wow. Just gotta disappear like that. An aesthetic vision of what good men do with the days of their lives. And each of these groups is distinct from the TGC boys, whose project is insular, narrow, gospel exclusivity that is at best agnostic towards masculinity at worst. This is the early draft of your analysis. So you're basically saying you're hopeful, you're providing a framework that might bring mutual understanding and bring people together so that things can get reconciled. So I thought that was a pretty good thread.
Thanks, man.
Well done.
Yeah. I mean, I like how you ended on the optimistic note, because I've notated this too, where, I mean, you talked about the revival that's ongoing in America. And, you know, I actually was optimistic, like in looking at just like an issue like abortion, I'm very optimistic, even though abortion, anti-abortion, abolitionist messaging is absolutely atrocious. They have no message. Their strategies are awful. Yet, if you actually look at the environment, there's a positive environment to make tangible change on the issue of abortion. It's a longer game, but you know, if you go through the young men, you could actually like get a lot of young men to be pro-life if you actually played your cards right. And, yep. you know, I know I wrote an article on like just, you know, how do you improve the pro-life numbers? It's you basically run the Trump playbook. But and so if you look at the ground is very fertile for, you know, Christianity in a broader sense. So going beyond like the issue of abortion, it's very broad for Christianity, very broad for evangelism. And they're just refusing to see the, you know, the forest for the tree.
Yeah. So I do have another thread to point out because brothers, you know, people say that Twitter is not real life, but there's definitely some not truth to that. And this thread from DJoes24 or Joseph really sums it up well. I guess we're back to the Twitter isn't real life argument, mate, that G3 used to use just before Michael O'Fallon resigned from their board and Christian nationalists started winning political races. Look at the evidence. Doug Wilson is losing people faster than a movie theater fire. And he says, look at the most popular millennial pastors and thinkers, literally everyone under 50, Save, Kahn, Webben, Isker, Wolf, Robles, Foster, etc. All a year ago, allies of Moscow. Today, Foster has left the CREC, which happened several months ago, by the way. That didn't just happen like the day that he posted that, in case it wasn't clear. And Doug Wilson is at a literal war with the rest of them, albeit a little bit unilateral. You can claim that he's safe and fine in his keep in Moscow, sure, but on the national influence, but his national influence is engulfed in flames. All bridges are burned now. The only people left are CREC climbers. He is more a liability and asset. I think that's a little too pessimistic. So your thoughts on that? I liked this tweet because of the first part. Like when people say that Twitter isn't real life, hey, I called for Michael O'Fallon to be removed from the G3 board like a month or two before it happened, and it happened. So I don't know. Maybe it just kind of toots my horn a little bit to hear that part, but.
Well, yeah, there's that. There's also the fact that all these guys act like Twitter is real life because it's worth, you know, disfellowshipping people or calling for an internet council to deal with. That sounds like it's real life level importance.
I mean,
when Twitter basically killed the recent funding bill, it's hard to argue that Twitter's not real life.
That was killed.
Yeah, they're blaming Elon Musk, but still. I mean, Twitter.
I pay zero attention to Congress because I don't think we can. There's victories to be had there, but it's good to know that there might be victories to be had there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's sort of a limited victory because I think unless Congress are run out, you know, what hope do we have? But they sure got checked, and that you know they're feeling it as a loss, and so I'll take it.
Yeah, you got to recognize when the enemy thinks they've lost.
Mm-hmm. And press harder. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, the people that say Twitter isn't real life, they think Twitter is real life. So it's almost like a projection issue on their part. But at the end of the day, it is the town square. It is, you know, it's kind of a gladiator arena in many cases. It takes, except it's more like a free for all gladiator arena, like a, you know, call, one might say a Call of Duty.
I'm going to say Hunger Games, but you can't use Call of Duty anymore. The game's gone too. Back in the day, yeah. Things have gone downhill with that game.
Well, to go back to Joseph's thread that you just read, this is all outsider speculation. I don't have, you know, spies in the room or whatever. But it looks to me like Doug Wilson has now kind of accessed what I'm going to call, this may not be fair, this is just me summarizing, kind of he has an inroad into like NatCon conservatism. He's on Tucker Carlson. Pete Hegseth is connected to him. He's going to be the administration. Maybe. And it looks to me like perhaps the Wilson camp has decided we can replace our audience, which has often been a lot of these Anons that are attacking, the White Boy Summer guys, even guys like Joel Webben, who clearly wants to be a friend, we'll just jettison them. And what we're going to fill it with is sort of a NatCon level conservative. And so I think they may be making a calculated exchange there. I don't know if it'll work, and maybe my speculation's wrong, but that's what I assume they're doing. They're not just trying to torch their audience. They're trying to do something to gain one they see as more valuable.
Yeah, I think you're right. And
I mean, that's part of the JD Hall like criticism as well.
Oh, yeah. Someone got on me in the comments section. This was a very valid critique because I use the term hate your audience. And I use that to mean when you go to war with your audience. So, you know, that's when I say someone hates their audience, that's the behavior I'm describing is you're constantly at war with your own audience. And that's not fun to watch. Like I stopped watching Steve Dace because he just constantly was at war with his own audience. And even on something I agreed with him on, I didn't want to hear about it. I didn't want to hear the war anymore. You know, say what you need to say and move on. And I was on the same side of him on the issue, except, you know, then he would also kind of go woke or certain group with small hats. But nonetheless, I think Doug Wilson's also falling into this camp with the whole milk and honey, doubling down, tripling down, quadrupling down, burning all the bridges and stuff like that. And his role in the Tobias Reimann-Schneider thing. And he, I do believe, is petty, by the way. He's on tape being petty in that recorded Zoom call. He is high school, middle school level thinking process on social groups and stuff like that. So I think he is super petty. I don't know how much that's reasons. I don't know how much that can be attributed to the smarter people in the room, but you know, Doug Wilson or James White, I don't know if they really think like that, but some people do on the turf war thing.
So that's depressing. It's depressing.
Yeah. And that was kind of the most stunning thing about that recorded Zoom call is how he's like, you're hanging out with these people instead of with us. And that was kind of like, that was stunning to me.
Yeah. So I never watched it. But you know, that description is pretty middle school girl, you know, like,
yeah, I wrote about the mean girls of Medeva or something.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, the NatCon point is interesting. Cause yeah, he did get access to NatCon along with Al Mohler. I think even like, you know, but at the same time, if he thinks that's going to be like an exclusive access, like if he thinks he's the only like guy in, you know, new Christendom that's going to get access to like NatCon, which I think is like Yoram Hazreni, his project, who, you know, wrote the endorsement on Stephen Wolf's book unironically. But yeah, if he thinks if he thinks he's going to be able to just like gatekeep that kind of access or even to like Tucker Carlson, that's just not going to work, especially since, you know, Martyr Maid was on Tucker Carlson and, you know, broke the internet.
And this has to do with what I was saying about hating your audience, because you want this audience instead of the one that you have. So isn't that hatred to some degree?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean,
the Republican Party hates their base because they want to appease certain other groups. So there is a precedent for long precedent of hating your own audience.
I mean, for the record, Christ used the word hate to mean love less, but you know.
You're right. But it's a preference issue. Yeah.
this is a good from the Bishop of Railway for five Canadians. Why don't they make memes themselves? So many funnies going around the Tobias scandal and Woke Wars 2. What stops them from memeing?
I mean, it kind of goes back to the left can't meme.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They're not used to being on the left. And it's kind of accelerated that exact dynamic. That's right.
I mean, they literally did the meme. If you've seen like the recent Apologia and or even James White clips of, you know, Hitler believed in natural law, like they're actually using that talking point.
So, well, I mean, Durbin's whole entrance into X was an attempt to meme.
He did the butt slapping.
Yeah, man.
Video, which I don't understand where you found that or
isn't that might be Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, it was SNL, but still. I'd never seen the clip before. And the way he, it was just
cringy. Homoerotic.
Just not a bad, you know, somebody's doing PR for Apologia and they should have thrown their body in front of that.
Oh, that's a good question. Dace will be out of place at the Right Response conference. I think so. He's going to be in a room with a bunch of noticers and he refuses to notice. I think he's going to be a little uncomfortable there.
He'll also be in a room with a bunch of anons.
So I want to go to this tweet thread by Link. He tried to do a survey of Anons. So this is some public service that he was doing. So he has like a few questions. So he does marital status. And I would appreciate it if the non-Anons didn't speak so we could have a more accurate count here. But majority of the Anons were married or engaged to be married. So, whereas a minority were single. So that's, again, we're going to assume the honor principle here. I did not answer any of these questions because I'm not technically anonymous. So majority of the Anons say they're married.
And keep in mind, if you look at, like, I know you posted the user data for this channel.
Yeah.
So if you were to cross-reference that and just say that, hey, like, the Anons are probably, you know, distributed age-wise the same as, like, you know, the average viewer of this channel, it would make sense that the average Anon is married. Obviously, you know, the next one is employed.
Yes, so employed. Overwhelming majority employed. And very small percent. I'm not sure we're going to see a smaller percentage than the percent that say that they're unemployed. Again, I can't actually do the math at the top of my head, not having seen these votes, taking out the non-Anon people that spoiled the vote here. So because they wanted to see the results. So clearly most, this looks like 90% of the Anon said that they were employed, which is pretty good. Pretty good. I mean, that could also include people who are retired, people who are students and not working, which, hey, you should definitely be working while you're a student, in my opinion. Or people in between jobs because the job market sucks. As an Anon, the number of children fathered. So those who have children, and there's a pretty even distribution. Living status. Majority own a home or land, and Richard. Seven and a minority is parents' basement. So there, that does exist in similar number to the slightly lower than the unemployment. Maybe, I mean, yeah, give or take, because the percentage is off, the votes count isn't the same. So I guess there is some similarity in the count, but
which again skews that the Anons are actually like older. They're not even like under 30. You know, these fatherless, angry young men that, you know, Doug Bolson so happens to like label them as.
Yeah, I think that's a failed tactic to label people as fatherless.
The left, it's a angry leftist young tactic. Men.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, that's how the left. That's right. How the left plays the game. And obviously, once it stops working, that strategy is doomed because then they don't actually know how to argue.
Right. But luckily for them, we are in the more post-debate culture. So as an, okay, we just did living status. Why are you Anon? So majority was work career risk. So there's a work career risk, and then minority was personal choice. And then some people said hide from accountability. I'm surprised there wasn't social risk. Also, maybe that's also included in work career risk is also social risk. You don't want to make your in-laws mad or anything like that. Because I get that, you know, people could get mad. Yeah. Not going to tell personal stories, but yeah, I get that.
All this matches with my experience. I didn't see this thread, but like, this is the Anons I know.
As an Anon, does anyone have your at for accountability? Majority of them say, well, I guess technically this is where the math is hard on me. So it looks pretty even.
Yeah.
Between yes and
50-50,
no.
Yeah.
It's close to 50-50. So.
But even that might not even be a very accurate measure, because again, if a lot of people are, you know, the new thing now, the trend for a lot of like Anon, especially younger Anons, is that, you know, you're starting to translate the online into real life, and that technically would give, maybe not accountability is the best word, but, you know, more socialization on a local level.
I mean, what does it matter if the people who are not anonymous aren't following or being followed by their pastor? So it's kind of a moot point.
Yeah,
but people like Neil Shenvey demanding that, you know, he provide their pastor, let me contact your pastor to see if he's okay with calling him gay or something, whatever he was being called.
Yeah, pastor,
which was totally valid, but
your pastor lectures you on how you should have used a more biblical term like sodomite.
So,
but God whispers about those things at Neil's church.
Yes, very much. As an Anon, how often do you engage in some form of ministry, active outreach, and witnessing abortion clinic, protesting tracts, etc.? I mean, majority of Anons was under one a month, so one or less, I guess, because two or three is the next option. So, yeah, that one I think was a little too specific to certain activities that are on the street.
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily intra church, but you know, outside, extra.
Yeah, stuff like abortion clinic protesting just takes a lot of, you know, you need to have more free time, I imagine.
And how does something like works a job that lets my wife stay home to homeschool the kids? How does that? I mean,
technically, there's nothing like, you know, if you interpret, like, say you're in like worship or you do some kind of like worship ministry, ushering or whatever, that might, you might actually not even answer yes to that. Or like,
that's what I'm saying. It's too hype. Yeah. It's a very hyper specific question. But it is trying to address Jeff Durbin's critique.
Yeah, which I understand.
Hey, don't move on too quick. I see that I'm in the majority on the soft A Anon pronunciation in the next one. So I'm going to take that as a win.
So Anon as opposed to Anon seems to be the consensus.
Yeah.
The woke wars too consensus. So it's more of a during war consensus because it's not quite over yet. The DWC. Are you an active member and in good standing at a local church? Overwhelming majority, yes.
And it also just could be that the ones that, you know, said no
aren't actually not, Christian announced.
Yeah, they might not go to, they might have just encountered this poll.
Which makes sense to me. But this is pretty good. These are pretty good numbers.
Yeah.
And there might be a reason.
This is what you want people doing, you know, like
there might be a good reason that they're not in good standing at a church, because one, they might just be a passerby, you know, they're not actually a Christian, they just might be filling out this poll because
it's
good research. That's what you're saying. And two is like they're actively looking for a church, and it's hard in a lot of places. I hear about it.
Yeah, I hear about it a lot too.
What were you gonna say?
Just that I hear the same thing, that like, hey man, help me find a church. And a lot of these guys probably have to be Anon from like their home church, you know, that the TGC pastor or whatever that is there, they couldn't trust him to know what their priorities are, because he would attack them as monsters.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely makes sense to me. And then did you have a good relationship with your father? Overwhelming majority is yes. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you actually know some of these guys, this is unsurprising. And the thing is, Doug used to be aligned with anonymous accounts. They did a lot of work for him. He's got to know better than some of this rhetoric. I don't know if Jeff Durbin and Doc do or not, but some of these guys have to know better than these cheap rhetorical, you know, mudsling tactics they're using.
Okay, he actually put it into nice pie graphs. Oh, wow. So that's really helpful. So the marital status was 74% or 74.5% married. Employment status was 90.6% employed. The children one's a little split. It doesn't specify between having kids and not having kids. 64.3% own a home and land, 26.5% rent, and then 9.2% parents' basement. who knows how old these people are either. So might not be the worst thing in the world. Active member in good standing at a church, 86% yes to 14% no. And then good relationship with your father is 86.5% yes and 13.5% no. So almost exactly the same as good relationship and good church. And why are you a non? Was 67% work career risk and 29.8% personal choice and only 3.2% hide from accountability. Good question is from whom? How often do you engage in some form of ministry? And again, that wasn't the question that you asked in the first place. And does anyone have your at for accountability was 50% no. So, and it's good that he had those pie charts. Maybe I should just read those the entire time.
That's a good thread.
Yeah, it really kind of opens your eyes, but also you said it kind of confirms your own experience.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I mean, the guys I know that are non, if they were in my area, some of them are. You know, I have guys in my church who are anonymous on social media, but the guys that I know who aren't, I would be delighted to have them as church members.
So, I mean, the more you, again, it goes back to these people don't actually touch grass and they're way too in their heads. It's way too much ego. So they see, like, you know, the papal fart meme, and they want to know who did that.
Well,
and that was. Go ahead. Sorry. My point can wait.
Yeah, you can go.
I was just going to say that's the other side of the Anon thing, right? So they believe these guys are all piping off in ways they wouldn't if their face was attached to it. But if their face was attached to it, the critics would be much less ready to be like, oh, you're just a basement dwelling incel. Right, like the Anon issue is for the critics in this in a comparable way that it is to the Anons themselves.
Yeah, I mean technically kind of what you're saying is like, you know, the Anons are reacting to, you know, the idiocy of a lot of the big wigs.
I mean, did you see Cat Turd completely dunk on Dan Crenshaw today?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
And the guy, Dan Crenshaw, tried to claim that he wasn't rich, even though we know from his stock portfolio this dude's a multi-millionaire.
A congressman.
He's been crushing it up on the stock trading. Wow. Because he just became an expert stock trader after getting elected to Congress in 2018. I mean, who knew?
Did he outperform me with all his insider knowledge?
Probably. But no, he also gets to vote for the policy that he wants.
Crenshaw is the incarnation of Black Rifle Coffee. You know, making his money selling himself as some kind of conservative brand and hating everything about actual conservatives.
No, they call him eye patch for McCain for a reason.
Oh yeah, that's
like apparently Cat Turd was a military vet, so
but you know
he tried dunking on him for that and it just backfired.
In Crenshaw's defense, it's not as bad as Representative Bacon out of the great state of Nebraska, replying to one Pete Quiñones that, you know, that he needs to read the book of Revelations because he added the S. And because Pete asked, which country would you rather see totally destroyed, America
or eliminated?
Eliminated, yeah. America or Israel? And he's just like, well, you need to read the book of Revelations. And that's a sitting congressman.
Yeah.
So. Non serve a good purpose for things like that. Not that Pete Quiñones is anonymous.
No, but you know, it kind of one ups the stupidity of Dan Crenshaw.
So one thing I wanted to touch on was the people who think people spend too much time on the internet. And in the spirit of Christmas, I did want to bring this up from Jeff Durbin, who came on to Twitter maybe 2 weeks ago and claimed that everyone's spending too much time on the internet except for him. So I'm just going to let you know who's saying that.
But if you ask me, I'd say that right now is just about the right time. So I feel like I could sing and dance, guys. Here it comes.
Oh, stop it! Stop this madness right now! Save me! talk about Christmas now?
I'm completely and utterly, Chris, I am totally confused right now. Who let him in? Can I help you? What do you want? What?
Yes, you can, by taking down any Christmas decorations you already put up. My name is Nebuchadnezzar Smooge, and it's now time for Christmas.
Okay, first of all, that can't be your real name.
It is.
Is Nebuchadnezzar even a name?
Absolutely.
It sounds like you took a Bible name and a Christmas name and you smooged it together.
It is my name. My dad wanted to name me after Nebuchadnezzar, and my mom wanted a name harder to pronounce.
Well, success. Okay, so.
So, I'm just saying, when you do that, you shouldn't lecture people on spending too much time on the internet.
Or wasting time.
Well, yeah, I mean, and here's the thing. That is church, that is mega church drama ministry level of comedy. And I'm not, it's good mega church drama ministry level. Like, that's good for what I just described it as. It might not be good if you're trying to build a platform of, you know, Christian to make Christian movies not suck, but, and it might not be good if you're trying to lecture people on not wasting time on the internet, but
yeah, that's the thing. Like, you can do that. It's just kills your credibility when you criticize the equivalent, you know, that's so depressing. Right. That should be a good lark, but now we're looking at it as evidence of hypocrisy. And I would rather just kind of be like, oh my gosh, guys, that's going to live forever on the internet.
You'd rather forget that even existed.
Yeah.
So, and now I guess the latest thing is that memes are very much disallowed.
Let me just add real quick. I mean, again, the Christian nationalist community is very forgiving. I mean, we're willing to overlook the bad comedy. We're willing to overlook Doug Wilson's many questionable elements of his past. And you know certain things that he said. But because they're attacking the Anons and attacking their own audience, so to speak, that a lot of these is just like, yeah, hey, look, Doug, we overlooked your Romanist view on concupiscence. The amount of things that have been overlooked with a lot of these people. I mean, even James White, a lot of his questionable
Owen Strand associations. A lot of things about Owen Strand were overlooked while after he flipped from being super woke to being woke.
And he technically is somewhat errant on the Trinity, because I think
What I'm saying. Yeah, he's with Bruce Ware because he married into his family, I believe.
I mean, so again, a lot of these people were willing to overlook certain flaws that they have, provided, there's peace in it, out of almost a spirit of peace. And,
right, fraternity.
And because we have more pressing issues.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's the thing. What is the more pressing issue? If I had to come up with, top five, we're going to play Family Feud for a second, top eight answers on the board as the threats to the church. I do think the whole, Judeo-Christianity is up there. I do think it's up there that we basically have entire ministries and so much money being poured, taken away from Christian causes to serve a foreign nation's interest. I think that's a major problem. And Christian media outlets, because I kind of started one. Like, look at Christian Post; they run at least two or three articles a month that are just ADL talking point articles. Like, they just ran one attacking Candace Owens, and it's basically a press release from some nobody. Like, why'd they run it? Well, it's Candace Owens, first of all, so maybe that's a reason to run it, but also because it was, a pro-Jewish organization. So what's the deal with that?
Yeah, man, the amount of time that I've spent in the last year thinking about the Jews proper is almost non-existent. It's just not something I think about a lot. But once you attack my friends who I know that are good guys, because they're like, hey, is it weird that multiple porn sites are owned by Jewish people? You make it the thing that you're apparently telling yourself you're at war with,
Well, that was the latest talking point this week by James White is, all these reformers, they didn't spend nearly as much time talking about this as you do. And, it's kind of, well, one, it's not pressed to the forefront of, like, you know.
Yeah, I came up with, like, three reasons why it's more relevant now.
Like, it is very relevant, you know, in the American political system, especially when one party is completely owned by, you know, Bolsheviks, what are functionally Bolsheviks. And then the other is kind of like not Zion is being fought over by, like, you know, the neocons, which include a lot of Zionists. You have more normie cons, and then you have the, I guess, dissident right, for lack of a better term, or the paleocons, really.
I mean, yeah, Yelimoth says Martin Luther kind of wrote a book about it. You've definitely pointed out that Turretin has written on it.
Turretin, you know, it's funny when you see the question, the subtitle is Against the Jews. Because, again, he does that for every group. We affirm against the Jews or whatever, or against the
and Romans. That's Turretin who says that.
Yeah, that's just how he structures his work. It's, you know, we affirm they are,
and we're against
against this group.
Okay, so trying not to get YouTube struck here. So I think I have one more thing to show on the Twitter sphere, and then I guess we can talk about the memes that have gotten people into trouble. So this is Joel Schmidt, who seems Canadian, who's Canadian, and
we're doxing
a Canadian Baptist. Christians of X, you must be accountable to your elders for what you post on here. I encourage everyone to include your church in your bio so that you can be held accountable if need be. And to the Anons, make sure your elders have access to review your tweets regularly. So you're a pastor. So your thoughts, do you have the capacity to monitor people's tweets in your congregation?
Not unless they send them to me, you know, and we have a laugh about something. Honestly, our church membership process is supposed to vet for Christian character. And so I'm happy to give my church members the benefit of the doubt. If they want to, you know, if they want to throw something my way or say, what do you think about this? Happy to do that. But yeah, who's got time to have a Twitter list of just their church members and, like, scroll through it for wrong think or wrong tone, whatever that means? It seems so ridiculous. I don't know what Joel Schmidt's ministry life is like. Maybe he's got that kind of time. Maybe he has lack of trust in his people.
He's a layman, so.
Yeah, and here's the thing, too. I'm one of these guys who's like, you know, accountability is good. So I'm happy for people to drop in and check out my tweets. I'm not pushing any of that off, but no, there's no room in a even remotely active schedule to say I'm just going to start reviewing all my tweets, and I'm certainly going to review all the messages I would get from somebody who thinks they tweeted something that they shouldn't have. Somebody like Neil Shinby, and vetting whether or not I should even find the criticism credible enough to pay attention to. It's just a ridiculous proposition.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you're talking about things that are subjectively sinful or only contextually sinful and not objectively sinful.
Right.
Like, you know, criticism of Neil Shendi, well, if it's an unfair criticism, then it might be sinful. But then you would have to get some pastor who might be a normie, unaware of who these people are, and would have to do an investigation or an inquisition, if you want to use that word.
I mean, most pastors don't even know what a Neil Shenby is.
Yes, and you're asking pastors to do an inquisition into whether these tweets are valid or not. And, I mean, you look at 1 Corinthians, was it 5 or 6? That one deal is 1 Corinthians 5 deals with the excommunication, 6 it deals with the lawsuits. I get those kind of mixed up. So you're talking about 1 Corinthians 5, and what's the example being used? The guy that's, you know, sleeping with his stepmother or the widowed stepmother or whatever, and think that
I think it's that's stepmom. Fine. Yeah.
Yeah. And he thinks that that's cool. That's the example used for Paul saying, throw that person out of the church, something that's objectively wrong, something that even the world thinks is wrong, not being mean. I mean, he does call out quarrelsomeness and divisiveness. We do see that, but he's not saying throw those people out. Until he says have nothing to do with certain people who want to instigate debates for no reason, which is in one of the pastoral epistles. But even that, that's not what we're talking about here.
Right.
We're talking about mean tweets about people, not someone who's trying to do genealogies or end times prophesying, maxing, and stuff like that.
or Doctrine of the Trinity or all kinds of more pressing matters. So Stormy Squad in the chat is right. Integrity is good. Accountability is good. Like, these are general principles that are good things. But to make them a cudgel to use against your enemies because they take a sharper angle on a topic is just wild to me. Even the idea of like mean tweets, we've all talked about this, but who defines what mean is? I think Neil Shinvey's mean to the church in pushing false doctrine and bolstering J.D. Greer's corrupting work. I think that's really mean. Someone who says he's scum for doing that, that doesn't seem mean to me, at least not mean to the cause of the truth.
I mean, technically our standard of mean is so watered down compared to like, you know, what probably would have been the common verbiage of like previous centuries of like the brilliant minds that we look up to, you know, all those dead authors that people are reading. They'd be like, wow, you guys are really tolerant down there.
Oh gosh.
And just gives it's a
like,
bad
we would like the list of words that we have would all be like, you know, red flagged in your society. And you know,
it gives a bad witness to the church. I mean, Protestants, we need to be putting our most masculine foot forward because a bunch of people are on the internet thinking that Catholicism is actually based. I doubt that it is, or that Eastern Orthodoxy is based. I mean, sorry, I don't want us to get conquered by Muslims. So it's going to be a no from me on Eastern Orthodoxy. But anyway, like there's people on the internet that think those are masculine and based. Why are we asking for people? Why are we trying to create a system to struggle session people in the local church? What about that is good for evangelism on social media, which I do think is a valid mission place to evangelize because this is where ideas and people are impressionable on social media. We can use that to our advantage on social media.
I mean, the whole point of Paul going to Mars Hill in Athens was literally going to the public square where the intellectual discourse was happening. The modern equivalent is undoubtedly Twitter.
Yeah. And fifth generation warfare is the omnipresence of the battlefield. So you should definitely check out my book, Winning Not Winsome, 10 Commandments of Spiritual Warfare. Introduction talks about the generations of warfare and somewhat their applicability in the church context. Because, you know, there's not a whole one-for-one in terms of blitzkrieg tactics of third-generation warfare. It doesn't really translate. But anyway, exactly. Yelamoth, yes. Eastern Orthodoxy does not have a good history of fending off murderous satanic ideologies, communism included. So that was the last tweet that I wanted to show. I guess we can get into some trouble on meme review because that is pretty relevant because some people want to launch an inquisition on memes. I really shouldn't be using inquisition like this, but I know they wouldn't like the term inquisition being used. I'm actually not. Based on what my understanding, I'm not
favorably disposed to the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah, I don't think the Spanish Inquisition was the worst thing ever because, you know, that aforementioned organization that I was talking about that wanted to, cancel Candace Owens, they're trying to do a thing on the Spanish Inquisition. And it's like, you do realize the Inquisition only went after people that were in the church. Like it didn't go after people who were Jewish but not pretending to be Christian. So troublesome memes for meme reviews. So the first meme is the I'll take the Christian, hold the Judeo. It's a picture of Mel Gibson with a white boy summer backdrop, and this is the meme that Rich Pierce, I think I misspelled that, but this isn't published yet, so I can fix that in time. He wanted to cancel Eric Kahn over this meme, so it's going to be our first meme for meme review. Also, in the Evangelical Dark Web newsletter, which you should totally sign up for, the first image on an article appears in the email, so I want to make sure that that's not going to like turn people away. So, friendly Mel Gibson white boy summer meme to be on the newsletter.
This one blew my mind because it became a test of fellowship and maybe even like whether or not you're a Christian in James White's estimation. And that flabbergasts me. So you know, whether or not you're comfortable with the term Judeo-Christian, that someone saying they don't want the Judeo side is somehow they don't want it associated with the birth of Christ is wild to me. And I've met Rich once, fine guy. Again, learned a lot from James. This one just blew all my capacitors. The one that like was at the heart of the Tobias controversy, I get that that's jarring to some people. This one seems as milquetoast as it can be.
I mean, I don't even think this is original. I feel like this one's I feel like this one circulated for a while. So the idea that you're being upset over this one just because Eric Kahn retweeted it, even though, you know,
no, he posted it.
Yeah, I know. Or sorry, yeah, he did post it, but I feel like this one's been around for months. That's a white boy summer meme.
I already wrote my article on this, giving my take. This is the one Tom Buck didn't like. So I just thought we'd show it. It's the Carol Baskins with her husband, Pete. I believe that's his name, from Tiger King. So if you're familiar with that, this picture kind of became famous because of Tiger King. And I mean, it's about Pete being led around on a leash by his wife.
I mean, metaphorically.
And Tom Buck got very mad over this meme. So I just decided to include it. I'm not trying to get you in trouble, Jeff. Tom Buck is Pete, and Janet Mefford is Carol Baskins.
Is that Janet Mefford? I've never seen that before. I've never seen this tweet before either.
That is a very old picture of Janet Mefford. She does not have recent pictures of her on social media or anywhere I can find. Yeah. Just saying.
Yeah, so this one's brand new to me. I know what it's referencing, but I love Tom. I think if you're the subject of a meme, my counsel would be to LOL at it, and that's probably your best strategy for getting it kind of moved on in the cycle of history.
And I wrote an article about this, about the hypocrisy, mocking hypocrisy, and the idea that Tom Buck wanted to mock Anons and Christian nationalists, but he couldn't take
keep in mind.
He couldn't take a one meme back. He could
keep in mind
out,
he was like. All these women deserve praise in ministry. And it's just like
one Megan of them Basham,
Ali Beth Stuckey. I forget who the third one was. And then he tweets underneath that, oh, and Janet Mefford. And I'm just like, Janet Mefford's a liberal. It's just like, this is literally why you got burned on Karen Gate, was because you trusted liberals with sensitive information. And then they burn you in the end. And Janet Mefford, oh, but Janet Mefford defended me. Well, if the church wasn't bought into Me Too and the Longhouse, nothing would have became of the manuscript being leaked. In fact, if the church wasn't Longhouse, Karen Swallow Pryor wouldn't have had a job in SBC seminary in the first place. But yeah, he blocked me for calling that crap out.
Yeah, I probably
and getting into a spat with his wife who started it. I didn't start it.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good advice, not to argue with women on social media in general.
Yeah, that's true.
But I only included that meme because Tom Buck wanted to struggle session William Wolf, Jared Moore, and Ben Zeisloff over that meme.
Oh, so
that's the only reason I'm including
it. And he hadn't actually seen all the attacks that Janet Mefford has done against William Wolf or Megan Basham's book. I mean, I think Stevie Wonder has seen it.
Didn't she go after MacArthur too?
I don't think so. Doesn't her husband work with MacArthur?
No, yeah, I'm thinking of Julie Roy's.
Yeah. So this is Jeff Durbin. That's a lot of clout I've got there. It'd be a shame if I got an X account and torched it in 2 days. Tough but fair.
I mean, again, I'm trying to be as fraternal as I can, but
I was sympathetic. I was like kind of sympathetic towards Durbin because maybe he's just caught in the middle and like
he's trying to back his boy play. Yeah.
Now I just think he is, you know, not a good actor in the situation.
I want that to be wrong because I've defended Jeff Durbin in my book. Like, I defend him when he talked about, you know, the woke pastors selling out and being sluts. I defended that behavior. I defended his use of language.
And we've done, like, I won't say fluff pieces, but we've done favorable work towards, you know, end abortion.
We are not fluffers around here.
No, but we've done favorable work, like echoing some of their ministry efforts before. So,
well, I also like defending people who are attacked.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind. Like, I'm not a very negative discernment blogger. if you want to call it that. I defend people like Eric Kahn. I feel like that article was defending him by highlighting the absurdity of Rich Pierce's attack on him. Because I clipped it and then I had an AI transcribe, and that's most of the article. It's bad. So this is the Squidward meme. I forget the context of this SpongeBob episode.
I wish I knew.
Hamina. I think that's the scene where they turn the Krusty Krab into a fancy restaurant and Squidward can't believe it because he just left and he's stressing out trying to impress his rival Squilliam. I think that's the context of this. Let me know in the chat if I'm wrong on my SpongeBob knowledge here. And it says, when I'm in a Judaizing competition and my opponent is Canon Press. So the meme format is not relevant to the image or context of the SpongeBob episode. I know that for certain. But it's definitely a Squilliam episode. I know that. I'm willing to bet on that. So
this is some deep SpongeBob analysis here.
Hey, it's a great show. I watch it with my kids sometimes. It's great. Great. SpongeBob is a blue-collar working-class hero, at least in the first few seasons. Then they make him like super dumb and naive. He was always naive, but they make him dumb. Like they take it to a childish, cartoonish level. You know, Flanderization is the term for that, and that happened to SpongeBob a lot, unfortunately. But guy had a lot of depth in season one. A
lot of depth in the SpongeBob. Okay.
Yeah. I'm a hard. We do a lot of SpongeBob around here. This one, I think this came from Nick Storm. Everything I don't like is woke, and it's James Lindsay on the magic carpet, which I think this meme's most commonly. Everything I don't like is Hitler, I think is the typical view of this meme, and has James Lindsay and Neil Shenvey also on it. I'm not going to read the next part, the subtitle, but it's truly magnificent, according to Neil Shenvey.
Yeah, guide to socio-political thought, just for a certain type of person.
Yeah, certain type of person. I thought that was good. This is the format of the meme. If you know, you know. It's, Mommy, what was Woke Wars 2 about? And Mom answers, the Longhouse didn't like anonymous memes, so they pretended it killed them. Yeah,
this is called callback, and it's just intelligent. Well done, whoever created this.
That's layered.
Let's see.
This one's mine.
Yeah, Tomism. That's from Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's during the trial where they discuss evolution. Yes, I believe.
Ironically, Aristotle is mentioned in that scene in that episode.
Yes, he is. So I don't know why they don't use that clip of Always Sunny to go after Aristotle. It would be far more effective.
Oh, yeah. Stop. You're feeding them resources, man.
I'm helping them out.
Yep.
This is Doug Wilson saying, Anons are a high-performance people. It's not even that much of a meme, but it is hilarious. It is hilarious nonetheless.
I don't know and how to we make could it make a meme.
This, we could make this a meme by just saying – blank is a high performance or a high performance people. We could take this template and run with it. I think this is a new meme template of high performance people.
There's
thank
a
you,
sister,
Doug Wilson.
There's a sister version of that. That would be Doug, you know, with him criticizing Anons and saying, but what if it's jealousy? What if you're just jealous of the Anons?
Yeah. And then we got, and this meme is a good summary. It's the domino meme. So at the small, tiny domino is some kid posts a meme in a group chat. And James White, and the big domino at the end is James White tries to defrock Eric Kahn for not being Jewish. Man, I didn't read that at first. But yeah, over the meme. Or yeah, over him rejecting the term Judeo-Christian, which they seem to be wanting to make a sticking point around Christmas.
Which kind of calls back to the, like, you can't say Jesus is king around Easter. Like, there is, I'm not going to ascribe sinister motivations to these guys, but, like, man, what do you think hell would like right now for us to, refuse to water down the distinctly Christian nature of Christmas or the other thing? I mean, that's a simple answer. That one's very funny, though, because back in the day, Justin Taylor at the Gospel Coalition said I shouldn't be in ministry because I pointed out that God had mercifully brought the together for a gospel to a close. And you're like, it's the same playbook.
I love this. Fathers are high-performing people. Appreciate that. So, yeah, that meme is good. And let me catch up on this one. So, least millennial discernment blogger goes over SpongeBob meme context in detail. My least millennial? I'm technically a millennial.
This is your new sub channel.
I'm gonna become a sponge tuber.
Yeah, SpongeBob expositor.
There's a category of that on YouTube, by the way.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I've seen some videos.
I'm too normie.
So an Aristotle Christian Christmas.
I don't know who made that, but I appreciate it.
This was in my comments section, I think.
That's anathema right there, man.
I mean, just as much as it, it's making fun of an anathema.
There's the point. Yep.
Yep. Using absurdity to highlight absurdity. This one, yeah, this is what happens when you go after Christmas carols. I left my people for a better life. I'm here to tell you why your culture sucks. When you hate on Christmas carols.
And keep in mind, he said the word hymns.
Yeah,
He didn't say contemporary Christian music that mixes old hymns with like modern Christmas music, which I hate.
Yes. What's his name? Chris Tomlin. Keep Chris Tomlin out of Christmas.
Like, we're not talking about that. We're talking about that. He did say hymns, so he's talking about the classic stuff.
And just factually incorrect. The more you look at what Christmas hymns are out there, the more you're like, no, this is rich in theology. Wrong. And that's why this meme's included. When you go after Christmas carols in December, I was going to say, it's included in here.
That's a bad look,
The headline of this article, this meme article I have, is Troublesome Memes for Meme Review. So, just saying. These are a little trouble. Oh, look, here comes the dank right. Usually this is involving Aztecs being confronted, but it is Doug Wilson. That is Andy Wilson. And
is that Sumter?
Is that Sumter? Or is that Sumter?
It looks like Sumter holding the menorah.
And then this is Wrench?
Yeah.
Okay. And then the...
Is dank right a term that Moscow uses?
Yes.
Dank right. He uses the term dank right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I got a friendly one at the end. Now, this should be reversed because John Harris should be the white one on the account of A.D. Robles being Puerto Rican, but... 15 minutes in, John Harris, let's dive in. And then A.D. Robles, hope you found this video helpful. 15 minutes in.
That's funny. It's very funny. Whoever created that one, well done. That's a niche meme, but it lands.
It is 100% accurate when it's accurate.
Yeah.
Robles can go longer than 15 minutes, but when he... You know,
yeah, when he's talking, New York Mets and New York Jets.
I actually want to hear his opinion on the New York Jets at the moment.
Yeah.
He could not have thought that Aaron Rodgers would not work out for them this badly, or at least worse than last year. But I don't know what the over under was on their wins for the future of their wins at the beginning of this season. But I feel like I would have hammered the under on that one. Would have hammered the over on the Steelers, under on the Jets. Cause people thought that the Steelers would come in last place with Russell Wilson at quarterback. That was just dumb.
Against Jameis Winston on the Browns.
Well, it was Deshaun Watson at the beginning of the year.
Sorry. Deshaun Watson.
So you gotta be, upset if you're a Jets fan. That's also worth noting. John Carter with an important point of order. Hates on Christmas hymns and celebrates Taylor Swift. Makes you wonder if he arrived from space about 33 years ago.
No accounting for taste.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I get not liking the movie Elf, because if you hear a movie is like super great and it's just average, you're going to hate it, because Elf is not that great.
Yeah, Elf wears me out. I, you know, I'm sure that puts me in the...
I like so many more Will Ferrell movies than Elf.
Yeah. It's like the thing I told my kids is it's like cream soda. The first taste of cream soda, you're like, man, that's incredible. And then after that, you feel like you're dying in diabetes juice. And that's kind of what Elf is. Like, there's, if it were a collection of skits, they'd be incredibly funny. But I just can't do the movie length version.
Peter Dinklage is the South Pole Elf. Yeah. Fun fact. That being said, any more last call? I'll do a last call for questions. I see one question already came in. So last call for questions. I do want to say, if you like this kind of content, do subscribe to the channel, to the podcast, if you are new. Jeff, where can they find you?
Twitter's probably the best place. Merely J Wright.
All right. I'll add that to the description. Yeah, we also have a Patreon-like system at evangelicaldarkweb.org/join. Linked in the description below. Gives you bonus access, bonus content. And, yeah. See, favorite Christmas movies. Muppet's Christmas Carol's up there. It deserves to be up there. I like Home Alone 1. That deserves to be up there. It's better than Home Alone 2. Home Alone 2 is more humanist. So... and secular, so not a.
Have you seen 8-Bit Christmas?
No,
no.
I thought that was a thing on A Christmas Story, which I didn't really like that movie until the Asian restaurant, which is at the end, and I'm like, yeah, we're cracking Asian jokes. Where was this the entire movie? I'm here for this part.
Well, check out 8-Bit. It is very much in view of A Christmas Story. But it probably lands a little bit more for our generation. I thought it was pretty well done. I'm a big Die Hard fan too.
Yeah, Die Hard. Yeah. If you're looking for a Christmas movie that's more recent, but like maybe an instant classic, I would check out Klaus on Netflix.
Yeah, okay, that's really good.
So like that, yeah. Again, that's a recent movie, but again, doesn't get
it
enough.
It is Norm McDonald's last movie.
Oh, okay.
I think it's his last movie. But Norm McDonald is a voice actor in the movie, okay. And he's great.
Yeah, incredible. What a loss, too, man. You know, it's funny when you say Klaus, though. Do y'all remember when Stewie on Family Guy went to war with Santa Claus and he runs around yelling, Klaus, show yourself?
Is that where they become Santa?
And that's like a three-parter. That's how it terminates, but him calling him Klaus, that will just always, that will be what I think of when I hear Klaus.
I mean, because the Family Guy episode where they become Santa and they're like, you know, this isn't being Santa, this is a home invasion.
Oh man, we got some hot questions, people trying to get us in trouble.
Yeah, I'm just ignoring the next Backwoods Belief question there. Someday it will happen again.
Is dispensationalism a heresy? See, I want to caveat this, because I believe that people can have heretical traditions and still be saved, because they weren't the ones that introduced those traditions. They're just instilled in the church, you know what I'm saying?
I grew up in a dispensationalist tradition, and so it's hard for me to call it heresy, because that carries a connotation of outside the kingdom. I think it's got real problems, but I've known a lot of faithful Christians who were
dispensationalists. Yeah, so I'm kind of saying the same thing. Like, I think the people who invented it were not sound. I don't think Darby was a sound teacher. I don't think C.I. Schofield, he was a deadbeat dad in his personal life. And had an at-fault divorce against him by his wife in the 1860s or 70s. Kind of hard to do back then, because you don't want to, you know, provide for your family. Like, not really convinced that guy was a Christian.
Yeah.
And that's before you dive into, you know, how a guy like that could have financed a Bible translation.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He was a deadbeat dad and couldn't.
Well, and the financing. You know, yeah, I'm conspiracy minded. The financing stuff on that is
ugly. Yeah, that's that.
Yeah, I simply don't believe that he was able to fund that himself, because of his career history.
Yeah.
It just doesn't add up. So I think that the perpetrators should be the people who introduce the theology, or, you know, a lot of the people who kind of add to the theology, like John Hagee. not the people who hold to what has already been created.
And Hagee is where it starts bleeding towards heresy. You know, it's like deep, deep error. So, I mean, I get where the question comes from. I'm just, if we're going to talk about the broad category, not heresy, right. Just wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of dispensationalists in the church that I go to and in a lot of the Christians that I interact with outside of the church and in real life. I went to a Christmas party this week. Most of the people there are super dispensational. And they're IFB fundies, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
Salt of the Which earth are my people. I love those people. The other thing that I do appreciate about dispensationalists is that they believe Satan is up to stuff. They're not agnostic about, like, Satan may be trying to mess some stuff up. And I feel like sometimes in the my camp, you know, postman, we're a little too ignorant of, like, there actually are people out there who are working hard to pull off bad stuff.
So next backwoods belief one, I think you sort of alluded to avoiding that one because you're not sure.
Just not seeing it.
Let's see. What do you think of Paul's teaching on elders avoiding quarrelsome behavior in 1st, 2nd Timothy? Does that apply to X behavior for the likes of White and Wilson?
No, it probably It probably most applies to their behavior.
I mean, I don't write about James White, say, if he's just making clown out of himself on his channel. I'm not going to like write on that. But when you go after, you know, Eric Kahn, that's when I'm going to clip you and write about you, because that has more to do with defending a brother.
Well, that's another one of those pastoral qualifications that's important. Also must be read in broad context. Who's defining who's being quarrelsome and quarrelsome towards who? So shepherds are supposed to be quarrelsome towards wolves. You know, not all conflict is quarrelsomeness. And so, I think it's possible they've entered into that. But that accusation is like a gotcha, is kind of useless, because you have to have some sense of, like, even with James White, who I think is wrong, in a moment when he thinks that's actually a really dangerous error, I can even grant him just the freedom to be wrong if, I guess, because I still am thankful that there's some people out there who will fight for what they think is true. So again, I'm just not ready to like discard them. I'm hoping they recover their footing.
Yeah. I'm not ready to label any more people, at least people in this fight, false teachers. There are bad actors. I think Cohen Strand, Neil Shenvey, we've named a couple of them tonight. Some people I just don't think are talented. I've alluded to them tonight as well. Not saying they're not saved, saying they're not talented.
Sure.
It's a difference. But yeah, there are bad actors. And I do think, Shenvey, Strand, cheap, top of the list. Did you see Toby Sumpter's stinker of a tweet on homophobia as a vile sin?
I didn't know,
but that reeks of like Gospel Coalition.
Yeah,
that's really shocking.
Yeah, I did not see that. If he, but objectively,
and then screenshot it, and then just like post that under every tweet.
Yeah, will totally keep that on file if he did say that. Klaus is my wife's favorite movie. Scrooge. Okay, 1951. So
I've heard good things about that. It's just, you know, I know It's a Wonderful Life is on Amazon Prime. Maybe I'll get to it this year.
Seems to be all the questions we got, and we are at our usual live stream time without going too late. So thank you all for a wonderful stream tonight. I think we've had a lot of productive conversation, hopefully. Have a blessed night. Stay based, Crisis King, and we will catch you on the next one.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.